Force with regards to what measures they need to put in place to prevent themselves from acquiring COVID when interacting with members of the public.
We go to the next call. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Sanka.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I don't think that the best answer to the question just now was the chap who's at home with mild symptoms. I think the chap wants to know what he can do at home to suppress his fever or to suppress his coughing, that kind of thing. If he should use Vicks on his chest, those kind of things. I think that's what he wanted to find out, how he can treat himself to make himself comfortable during his symptoms.
Dr. Bess.
Yeah, well, let me apologize to the caller because I thought I was clear in terms of if you think you have COVID, please call us. Please call the COVID-19 hotline. Please let your healthcare provider know. Your healthcare provider should be able to direct you as to what to do. We want to make sure that we are aware of all possible cases. We will make a determination if the person warrants a test, which is a nasopharyngeal swab, and then that test would tell us definitively whether or not that person has COVID. So we don't want any persons out there who think they may have come into contact with somebody with COVID and have now developed symptoms to stay at home. So I'm not even going down the road of the home remedies to use. We're not there. We're not there at this point. Please let the healthcare system know that you are out there if you think you have COVID.
Okay, we move to the next call. You're on the air. Good afternoon. Yes, go right ahead with your question, sir.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Go right ahead with your question.
Yes, sir. I'm calling about the COVID too, but I'm more concerned the water system, please. We don't have no water in St. Andrew to wash our hands, to do what we have to do around the house since yesterday.
Sir, you, I think you called earlier. We're trying to get somebody from the Water Authority to look into that situation. But in terms of the whole COVID response, how major is the situation with people who don't have access to water?
So I'll venture a response in relation to that, because obviously an instruction or advice to wash your hands regularly with soap and water cannot be carried out if persons don't have water. The Barbados Water Authority, I know, is acutely aware of this. They have been, within the resources that they have at their disposal, been dispatching water tankers or other solutions for persons who are living in districts where they do not have access to running water. Or where they may have been shut off. It is a problem that obviously preceded the current situation with COVID, but is made even more serious now that we are trying to encourage persons to practice hand hygiene involving the washing of hands. So I know that the Water Authority is aware. I know that they are, in fact, doing their best through the dispatch of tankers and other solutions to meet the need. It is possible that there will be areas that are not serviced or not serviced as regularly as people will want. But I am assured that they're doing their very best within the resources that they have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Richard Carter. And you would have noticed that we've just passed the 2 o'clock deadline. We'll be going to 2:15, so we'll continue to take some questions. And I'd like to thank Mr. Carter and Dr. Best for staying with us, as well as Dr. Sobers from the UWI. So we'll go on to 2:15. Your question, please. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
One of my questions, the gentleman that has died, how long can the virus stay with a dead body? And how would the undertakers handle that body?
Okay, so to say how long the virus is going to stay with a dead body is a little bit difficult for me to answer. What I can tell you is that the virus relies on live cells in order to survive. So the virus isn't going to last much longer in a body that's not viable when tissues are starting to decompose. Be that as it may, the Pan American Health Organization has come out with guidelines for the management of COVID-19 bodies. And this is advice for death care workers, which we have shared with the funeral homes in terms of how to manage persons who have died from COVID. So that's something that we have addressed nationally. We were approached just over a month ago by the Barbados Association of Funeral Directors, I believe it is. And we have been in communication with them, and we have given them advice as to how to manage bodies or persons who have died from COVID.
Mm-hmm. Another question. When a whole lot of people there were shopping, how would you all trace all of these persons?
Right. So there are a couple of things to consider. When we do contact tracing, we're not asking for every single person that you may have had a very fleeting contact with. We're particularly interested in the persons that you come into close contact with, and close contact could be defined as a minimum of 15 minutes.
Suppose we were down to the same aisle for that amount of time.
But 15 minutes in close contact within 3 feet? So what I'm trying to explain is that our emphasis in the contact tracing is persons in the home setting and persons in the work setting. This gentleman, as far as I know, wasn't working. That much I know, right? So our emphasis is what happened in his home, who came to visit him, who spent a long time. Obviously, we can't ask him, so we will have to ask other persons in the household who was in contact with this particular gentleman. So it is not every single place that he went and persons that he walked by or persons that walked by him. The other thing to consider is this guy came in very ill. This guy came in with complications of diabetes as well as a pneumonia. I'm pretty sure that he wasn't out and about for the last few days, but I don't have the details to tell you. This guy was sick. And if he was that sick and died within a few hours of coming to us, it therefore means he was not out and about. He was not at the supermarket when he was at his illest, which is when he's most infectious.
All right. Thank you very much. We got another question. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, go right ahead with your question.
Is it legal for a person to drive to a village shop, a bakery, and a fish market?
Zar?
If those places are open, and they're open legally, so the village shops are allowed to be open, bakeries are allowed to be open, and obviously if you live within close proximity of those places and you want to go there, then you will be allowed to go there. I suspect you're probably going to ask me what is close proximity and so on.
That is correct.
Yes. So, again, reason has to be applied. So if I'm living in, let's say, Fustic, St. Lucie or some other place, Sweetvale, St. George, it would be difficult for me to convince a police officer who stops me that I'm on my way to a village shop if I'm found in Bridgetown or somewhere like that. So reason should be applied. You have a responsibility to limit your own exposure as much as possible. We are allowing the village shops to open because we know that there are a number of persons who are living in communities who rely on these places to buy their groceries, perhaps day by day or every other day. And many of those persons are probably going to walk to the village shop. But yes, you can drive to these places. You can drive, for example, you're allowed to fill up your car with petrol. So you can drive, obviously, to the petrol station, but restrict your movement to the minimum that is absolutely necessary.
Okay, my understanding is that it is illegal to leave home unless you have a pass. For example, if I am going from Rendezvous to Purity Bakeries, from the moment I leave my home, I have committed a chargeable offense in the eyes of a police officer. Do I have to, proof do I have to give them to verify that I live in a certain area and therefore my distance is within that range?
All right, so you're asking for a level of determination and so on that it is impossible to give because you can't possibly cover every single permutation. If you are, and it is not illegal to leave home to go and get your medication, for example, it is not illegal to go and get gas. It is not illegal to go and get a top-up for your phone, nor is it illegal to go to your village shop and get food. So those are the circumstances under which, with the current order, persons are allowed to leave home. If you are stopped, then you will be required to give a reasonable explanation to the security officer who stops you that you are doing one of those three or four things which the order allows person to leave home to do.
All right, thank you. We got time for just one more call. Go right ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Go right ahead with your call.
Yes, sir. The lady just make a really interesting intervention. The question for me to ask, first, the guys, you guys could get the data to find if any person that was on our flight got ill sick. One. Two, for this gentleman's age, I know people like really British, they've got wheelchair people handling him direct, and if he's this sick, he had to get help to get off of that plane. Firstly, his wife's age, people is going to go to that house to check up on him and to help and stuff. I think, sir, I think what I should do is try to investigate everybody that was on our plane.
All right, sir. Would you like to respond there, and Dr. Bass?
Sure, thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
We're going to investigate. The investigation, no doubt, has started by the public health teams responsible for that gentleman who has passed away. Just to very briefly touch on investigating every person on the plane, I think you could appreciate that that may not be feasible. Furthermore, the guidelines say that for infectious disease like COVID, you're only checking within a 1 meter radius of in terms of persons who sat next to him. So usually that's two seats in front, two seats behind. And depending on the size of the plane and the design, two seats to the left and two seats to the right, whatever the case may be. So it's not everybody that would have been on that flight that you're going to be interested in doing contact tracing on. Furthermore, let me stress that it is highly unlikely, so he clearly, as an imported case, he would have been incubating. What is difficult for us to say is, was he shedding, what we call shedding of the virus? In other words, was he contagious the day he came in, the day he flew? Based on the timelines, maybe not, right? Maybe not. So that's something to consider. He wasn't ill when he left the UK. He wasn't ill when he arrived in Barbados. So we're hoping that he wasn't contagious until sometime afterwards. But like I said, these are the early days for the investigation for him. We will do all the necessary investigations because it will depend on when he started to show symptoms. And I don't have that information with me right now.
All right. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I really want to thank you for participating in today's Brass Tax Sunday. I'd like to thank Dr. Natasha Sobers from the University of the West Indies, Dr. Anton Best, Chief Medical Officer Acton, and of course the COVID-19 Czar Richard Carter for coming here and give us an update on everything that is happening. Of course, during the rest of the week, I'm sure we're going to be talking about COVID until. For those listeners who live in St. Thomas and St. Andrew and they're having problems with their water, I heard from Yvette Harris and the Barbados Water Authority is just reminding that they had to stop pumping from its station at Apes Hill because the levels at there are too low to allow pumping to continue. This facility being offline has resulted in water outages across the parish of St. Joseph and some districts in St. Thomas and parts of St. Andrew. And the tanker crews will be coming around to facilitate that. So that is why there's a problem in those areas, and you can look out for the tanker crew to come around. I'd also like to thank the NIS as well, Mr. Ian Cuddin-Edgell, Mrs. Jennifer Hunt, Derek Lowe, Katrina Ben, and the other young lady, Norma King Braffitt from the NIS, who participated in the earlier part of our show. And of course, I'd like to thank my program manager who extended our show by 1 hour. This is Sanka Price on behalf of Ronnie Clark. Thank you for being with us on Brass Tack Sunday for April 5th. God bless. Stay safe.